Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, we got Dawson's Toolbox. We get into comedy, the essence of comedy, and we have the Rotten Tomatoes game as well. So all that coming up. First, LegalZoom. Summer's almost over, and so is National Make-A-Will Month. Don't waste another minute. No better time than right now to make your will or trust. Let's do it with LegalZoom. Over 1 million people have used LegalZoom for their estate planning. Mark Garagus, super attorney. Mark Garagus goes to LegalZoom because if he can get it done there, he can get it done faster and cheaper than even he can do it in his own law office. So, still time to take control of your family and the assets, and a nice living trust would be good. Not sure which is right for you? Go with LegalZoom. They have a network of independent attorneys who can advise you on the best for your family, for you and your family. Because LegalZoom isn't a law firm, you never worry about the billable hours. That's why you go with LegalZoom, right, Dawson?
Make things easier for those you care about the most. Check out LegalZoom's Last Will and Living Trust estate plans right now during the final week of National Make-A-Will Month at LegalZoom.com. And to receive special savings, be sure to enter promo code Adam in the referral box at checkout. That's promo code Adam, only at LegalZoom.com, where life meets legal.
You're rocking with the best in the West, the station we call the Toolbox. Where we play everything good, but most often, it's that classic rock. And at the top of every hour, there's traffic and weather, which don't really matter. So to save time, we do them together. Dusty Rhodes is standing by with that traffic report, but I'll give it to you right now if you want to hear. There's traffic where there's usually traffic, and weather where you'll expect to find it. Outside. Quick reminder, tonight we celebrate the majesty of John Paul Jones with an hour of Zeppelin music. Stairway to Seven on the Toolbox. See what we did there? Look, it's a fine line between stupid and clever, and to be honest, I'm not really sure which side we're on. Smokey the Bear turned 75 last week. I'll take my ranger hat off to that guy and offer him a picnic basket. You want to talk about lazy? I mean, never before in the history of mascots has it been a mascot's job to tell you that only you can do his job. What the hell do we need Smokey for? Of course he works for the government. Hey, Smokey, smoke these, guy. It's fire season, everybody. And the Amazon is burning. Stevie Ray Vaughan with Chris Layton and Tommy Shannon, right here on the Toolbox. From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. With Gina Grad on news and Bald Brian on sound effects, plus we'll play the Rotten Tomatoes game, and Dave Damashek is here for good sports. And now, earlier today, he rolled his ankle trying to jump rope with a radar detector charging cord. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on a mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for sharing. We love that about you, right, Gina Grad?
That's right.
And Bald Brian.
Shut up, old guy.
RocketMortgage.com/Adam. And I also want to thank LegalZoom and Castrol Edge for sponsoring this show. Okay.
Any day you start off with Stevie Ray Vaughan's a good day.
Yeah, Stevie Ray Vaughan. Boy, you want to talk about a signature sound.
Indeed.
I don't know that much about Stevie Ray Vaughan, although I did see Stevie Ray Vaughan at the Hollywood Bowl, I think, once upon a time. Oh. Trying to think. He must have, I think maybe John Hyatt opened for him or something like that.
You probably got to see sober Stevie Ray Vaughan.
I wasn't. He was.
When he got
he was sober. Yeah, but I counteract his soberness with my drunkenness.
Double sobriety with a double shot.
Seeing two guys play guitar. It's a little blurry. Guy sounds like hell.
That guy's really shredding. Those guys are really shredding.
Yeah, but think about all the people who got to see a sober Stevie Ray Vaughan really kicking ass who were three sheets to the wind when they were watching him and have no recollection of it and also were, screaming at a hat rack the entire time. So, any of you bands out there or musicians who are thinking about getting sober, I'm going to be lit when I see you.
I'll be back it up.
So I will undo your sobriety
alcohol. When I saw Aerosmith in 1982, it was a tough night.
Right. So
Stevie Ray was in the top 10 artists most played in my house growing up. My dad loved Stevie Ray Vaughan.
I know it's a little newer. It's maybe a little departure from that signature sound. But you know the song Life by the Drop?
No.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Grab it. This is one of my favorite songs in the world. I don't care who it is.
It's a Stevie Ray song?
It's a Stevie Ray Vaughan song. It's a little bit newer. I think it's from the
90s. It's kind of a song about sobriety.
It actually makes me tear up a little bit. It is an incredible song.
Stevie Ray died in a helicopter crash 25 years ago now. Like it's
early 90s, right, Dawson?
It sounds insane now how long everything has been. But if Heath Ledger can be dead for over 10 years, Stevie Ray Vaughan can be dead for over 25 years.
Died in 1990.
30th year coming up on.
It's wild.
Wild, right?
Ugh. He'd be popping up everywhere these days.
Wow.
Man, I love this song.
Right on, coming right up to 29th year. Jesus Christ. Also, when you're young and people die when they're like 46, you're like, that guy had a good run.
He lived a full life.
That's right.
He used to put an 8-ball of Coke into a pint of Jack Daniels. A pint of Jack Daniels. And just drink it on stage all
He
night.
Lived that life by the drop.
He lived life by the drop.
It is kind of weird when the guys do the drugs that counteract each other.
Yeah.
I feel like...
brings them to zero.
Yeah, it's like, well, I got all the... I got the Red Bull, and then when I got the vodka over here, and then that's kind of jacking me up, but this thing's kind of pulling me back toward... And I'm like, oh, let me explain getting fucked up to... Kids, grab a knee.
Pick a direction.
Pick a fucking direction. Yeah. Either we want to go down or we want to go up. The middle... That's where we're all right now.
You don't want to grab some Coke with a Xanax chaser.
Yeah, well, you shouldn't even have Red Bull and vodka. Don't fight the debilitating effects of alcohol. Let it run its course.
Lean right. Or vice versa. Pound a couple Red Bulls and go do a Tough Mudder. But it's weird that we're trying to get away from what that is.
Yeah.
Tugging and pushing.
Yeah, I feel that way. But anyway, Stevie shall be missed.
Dawson, was the Smokey the Bear joke original?
Yes.
I mean, that was very funny.
You may hear that again.
Oh, Brian doesn't steal jokes this early in the game.
It's a good joke.
Thank you.
I was hearing Dawson do Smokey the Bear, or Smokey Bear, I think they like to be called, joke. My impulse was, that's a funny joke. Then my impulse was, Brian should use that joke.
Yeah, so I thought, I'm like, oh, that's a good joke.
If it, in fact, is Dawson's joke. And then...
So, I come up with jokes, they're just fine to be stolen.
That's right.
I'm not going to.
Oh, look, give him like a burrito.
I was complimenting you on
that.
He'll find another mascot to use.
I have found...
McGruff the Crime Dog. We'll find all the villains.
The Smokey the Bear thing has bugged me for the last 15 years.
It's a funny concept. And with also, I think you guys would agree with this, when you take people that you kind of consider civilians and you go, write something funny or do a best man speech or something, they oftentimes come through. Like, they're like, oh, this... The people have more of that in them than they think. They go like, I'm not a comedian. I couldn't get up there. I couldn't write a joke. I couldn't, whatever. You give people a little bit of time and a pad and pen, and they do come up with some stuff, way more so than you'd think. I don't know. It is kind of society, I guess, or something, sort of beats it out of them, because most all kids are natural jokers. And they're also natural friars. They all have some Jeff Ross in them. Uh-huh. And every 9-year old is, but they bust the chops of the brother and the sister. I mean, it's kind of nonstop. Right. It's a default setting for Sonny Natalia to make jokes at each other's expense constantly. So that's in us. That's in all of us. And then at some point, it's supposed to be sort of pushed aside. Which is strange, because if people grew up and everyone's like, well, I played the guitar or I played the drums when I was 11 or whatever it is, they usually dabble with it throughout the course of their life. They'll play a little bit at a party or something. Mm-hmm. They'll have a little weekend, whatever, or a little amateur hour. But comedy just goes away. It's interesting. It's in everyone.
It's a muscle that atrophies in most people.
I don't think it would be that way with cooking or gardening or music. You know, if you played, if you really loved being in the kitchen with mama and helping her bake at 11 or whatever, you would just carry that right through your life.
Back.
You wouldn't necessarily get a job at Porto's, but you would still be doing it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Comedy just, I think there becomes this crazy kind of fear of failure that you don't have with baking. And although I like a little bit of fear.
I have that fear every couple of weeks.
Burning a bun. But there's some sort of, you have to pick, I think they treat it like, I was going to say like sports, but even guys who are really good in baseball in high school end up playing softball. Right. Like on weekends, they dabble in it.
Pick up games of basketball, whatever.
Yeah, the school system works pretty hard. It's sort of.
Beating it out?
Yeah, it's like, I was going to say bleeding it. like when I was at the track last weekend before, and the brake pedals sort of soft in the car, I said to Sean, we got to bleed the brakes. Like, there's little pockets. There could be little bubbles of air inside of the hydraulic fluid. So what you have to do is, you guys are bleeding brakes?
Mm-mm.
That makes sense. I think people hear the term bleed brakes, but they don't really understand what we're talking about. So in order to bleed brakes, at least a sort of traditional way, like after you do a brake job, when you're done, you got to bleed the brakes because air gets into the system, in other words. So the system is all hydraulic fluid. Air compresses a lot more easily than the hydraulic fluid in the hoses. So if you're pushing the pedal and there's some air in the line, that'll compress and your foot will go down.
Right. Okay.
You with me?
Yes.
So what you have to do is go to the end where the caliper is, where the brake caliper, the clamp that squeezes on the disc. And it has a little weird nipple 10 millimeter release bolt on it, with a little nipple end on it. And you turn it and it opens it and then you shut it. So what you do is you get one guy in the car. And he pumps the brake pedal like three times, like one, two, three. And
on three times, fool.
On the third, he holds it down. Then the guy who's at the caliper opens the thing and it goes, psst, and shoots a little brake fluid out. And then he shuts it again. And he goes, now pump it again. Pump, pump, pump.
Pump pressure.
Put the pressure on it. Push. Yeah. Open it. Push it out. Tighten it again until we get the air, until we bleed the air.
So the air bubbles out.
Right.
Yeah, you'll hear a little psh, and whatever, it'll spit out. It'll be spinning fluid, too.
Right.
You put a little hopper under it to collect it.
So in school, we do that with knock-knock jokes.
School, you do that with comedy.
Yeah.
You got a little bit of comedy
pump
in the brake line,
pump
and
breaks.
we just bleed it out. Like, that's every single encounter I had in any kind of scholastic setting was me popping off and them trying to bleed it out of me. You know, get out, quiet, disruptive. No.
The school system does not celebrate improvisational comedy.
You know,
or any comedy.
You know, it's funny. It never said in all my report cards and all the discussions about what was wrong with me, no one ever said sense of humor. Mm-hmm. They said disruptive.
Yeah.
So it's like she's talking about the Civil War and I go, or like she goes, and then and Ben Franklin flew a kite. And I went, I don't know about that. Like, I wasn't doing that. I was making jokes. You know, like maybe his wife told him to go fly a kite, you know, and then like I'd try to get a. So when the teacher would go, he's disruptive, they weren't accurately portraying what I was doing. What I was doing was making jokes.
Yeah, cultivating punchlines.
Not being which were disruptive.
Working on material.
But I'm saying, why did it go down on every report card as he's disruptive? Like, so what essentially. What happened was, is it was seen through the prism of disruption, not through the prism of comedy.
Right.
So one thing is a skill that also is a marker for some kind of intelligence. Yeah. Like if you meet when you're, you know, when your kid's right. kid gets older, you start, you meet one of his friends that's kind of funny and you go, that kid's sharp.
Oh, we have committees come in here 3-4 times a week. They're above average intelligence at least.
Yeah, well, think about what the opposite is. The opposite, zero sense of humor usually means kind of dopey. Most of the time, people don't get the joke or know what you're talking about. So there's this, right. Mr. Bernal. So there's this. It's kind of a tell or marker of a type of intelligence, but also it's also potentially a job you could get rich doing in a world where we're talking about. Maybe I could have been either garbage man or I could do like aquarium cleaning. Those were kind of my options. This thing would have been a slightly higher paying third option, which is do something with your sense of humor. But it was never marked down as sense of humor. It was always just disruptive. Yeah. He disrupts the class.
At the very least, a skill to be developed. You clearly show a talent or a skill.
Also, here's why all the... Fuck these teachers and all your fucking hero status. You fucking dickheads couldn't figure out someone was funny. Like, you couldn't go, I get it. Your name's not Marty Fufkin, and you don't promote, you don't put comedy gigs on, you don't represent Jay Moore or anything like that. But you do have a fucking brain, right? Like, you're able to perceive things, right? Like, you don't know that they, like, you never said, well, that kid, he doesn't do the homework, and he's, his test scores aren't great, but he's smart. Like, he's able to take. He's able to take these things and twist, you know, turn a phrase and do these puns. And
or at the very least, the class reacts to him. Other people find him
funny. Yeah, everyone's laughing. Why as people, look, it's our job to sort of do two things as a teacher. Your job is to teach. This is over in part wisdom and knowledge and things that you've learned. And then there's a second part, which is kind of assess. Mm-hmm. You know, is this person... Is it coming from a troubled home? You know what I mean? Is he being physically abused or emotionally abused? Or do they have some sort of gift, some ability to count mathematics or something? But maybe it's a kind of a Rain Man thing. Maybe they're not good at taking the standard test, but they seem to have this ability musically or mathematically or whatever. So your first job is to kind of teach, but there's a secondary part, which is sort of like assess people. Yep. And then as a guidance counselor or something, like kind of steer them toward, well, this guy's really good with his hands. Maybe he'd be better in woodchopper, should focus on something like that. Why none of that with the sense of humor? Disruptive, shut up.
It's looked at as folly, I think. You know what I mean?
It's disrespect to the teacher. Yeah, and in that way, it could be a form of narcissism.
Not to be trifled with.
Yeah.
Or bothered with.
In a place where it's their job to try to pick out people's sort of strengths and play to them or weaknesses and bolster them. Mm-hmm. Interesting that I sailed through my entire career with not a person pulling me over and going, all right, you should write some of this stuff down. Maybe you could get a job for an ad agency writing funny jingles or cards, you know, greeting cards. I had two encounters. I had my guidance counselor, Mr. Tomey, who I have two recollections of two encounters. I had Miss Commissar, the health teacher who...
The commissar.
Yeah, seemed pretty ancient at the time. She must have been like 71 or something, and she pulled me aside after the class. I used to make fun of... I only remember this joke, and she didn't like it at all. She was bragging that her sister was a pathologist, and somebody said, what's a pathologist? I said, she's a trail finder. I don't know why I had path and trail. Sure. I'd just done a quick turnaround. She didn't like that. She was like, no, she's a highly, no, she doesn't find friends.
You don't know what
she
you're talking
she
about.
She doesn't camp. She's a physician or whatever. But she pulled me aside and she said, Adam, all the girls love you, which I thought was insane because none of the girls love me. But I did have... I had some weird appeal for the moms and like the older women.
Ooh,
like the girls didn't like me. These weren't MILFs. These were moms. And their daughters didn't much care for me, but the But the moms, the older women, kind of did, and they also wanted to know why their daughter wasn't interested. And I was like, yeah,
me too.
That makes two of us.
So, I actually had the same thing when I was probably your age. Like, I was very popular amongst the moms, not in a sexual way, of course, but like I was this harmless, chubby, you know, like harmless kid who like,
the
girls had no interest.
I think we know what they said.
My appeal to moms in, like, you know, 1988. Like,
there's nothing about him that's
a
threat.
Sweet. He'll never hurt anyone.
you can take him in a fight.
He's not going to try anything. Look at him.
Mine went a little further, which is the moms thought I was attractive. Like, you should be attractive, not because he's nice. Like,
that's where we split.
They liked my aesthetic, which their daughters didn't. But either way, Ms. Komisar said, all the girls love you, Adam. And I was like, okay, well, I'm not going to believe anything you say after this. And then she said, your parents hit you, right? And I said, no. And she said, your parents don't hit you. And I was like, wow, I don't know what I'm giving off. Also, I could kick my dad's ass when I was in the seventh grade. Like, I'm 200 pounds now. I'm on the football team. Like, no, I wish they would.
They hit you with silence.
Yeah, I wish they'd show a little initiative.
Hell yeah.
No and no. And I don't know. It's also, why are you teaching again? This is your read. First off, you can say a lot of negative things about my parents.
So
but
can you.
Everyone can. Physical abuse is the one department you cannot bring up. They have a clean, squeaky clean record with that. I mean, not even close. I have no idea, other than I was making jokes.
There
I don't know where
be,
she translated
there
that.
There had to be some flow chart of kids starve for attention, riles up class.
I feel
possible
like the kids that are getting beat on, they sort of, I feel like you can detect those kids.
Yeah,
I didn't,
they're aggressive.
I didn't embody any of that. I was just cracking wise and busting chops and like having fun. Yes. And also I was physically big. Like, it'd be hard to do that.
My image, I don't know. My image of the kid who gets beat on is either he's very aggressive towards other kids or he cowers. You know what I mean?
Like, right.
And I don't
which
see
one
you
are
being,
you?
Neither
you
one.
You carry girls to the nurse's office.
Neither one. Oh, yeah. So I'd already blocked that out of my memory, Mr. Bernal. Hero, everybody. That's right. The girl, chubby
girl
fell down. all right. We have Gina took a picture of an Arco station.
Yeah.
They sell fossil fuels, do they?
Yeah. Petrol.
It's a sweep already?
Yeah. So this is your basic Arco. I've had my identity stolen from two Arcos, so I don't go to them anymore. But their sign says, Arco, quality top-tier gas delivers maximized engine protection and positive vibes.
Wow.
Wow. This is big oil.
It's tough stuff.
These are the guys that were accusing of destroying our environment. And then they're also talking, they used to just talk about mileage and how clean your valve train. But this is good vibes.
This is cleaning your soul.
Positive vibes. Could you think of something further away? Now,
no.
It is crazy.
Digging into the
that
planet
hard,
with
man.
Your finite resources.
You're pulling your Subaru, which is you've got a keister full of puppies back there in your brat. So you're pulling in your Subaru, which is nothing but good vibes, and now it's all made with love, and now you're pulling into the Arco, and you're topping off with good vibes.
Your ledger is clear.
You're zen.
Wow. I'm telling you, man, self-esteem movement out of fucking control.
And
everyone's got to feel fucking good about themselves wherever they go all the time. But here's what I'm saying. Why does it work? Mm-hmm. Why does it work? Like, there's this great...
Are you Christy on the phone?
There's this great... Max Batty has something else to look for, but in that Alyssa Milano... The episode we're laughing about before.
Frances Fisher.
Somewhere, I don't know, about the 40-minute mark. She was explaining, I fight for everyone. I was telling you guys this. Like, I just fight for everyone. And I thought to myself, could you feel like she was fighting for you? Like, would that make you go,
oh, no, it's pretty.
I can take her. I don't have to go to work
kick my feet
anymore.
Up.
I got the Alyssa Milano fighting for me. Or like, even like, there's this famous, semi-famous footage of like, Obama wins the first election and there's black mamas like, woo, now I don't have to pay my car insurance and I don't have any, now that we have, then I'm done. I'm done. Or ARCA with good vibes, like, why does that work? Why would you think? And also, what evidence do we have? Right. What is there an evidence?
None.
Is there evidence of like, well, this politician's got the same last name as I got. Right. Now he's in office. No. Problem's over. Like, when does it ever work?
Just off the top of my head, is it the same instinct that like, you know, there's like cute animals, right? Dolphins or seals or whatever. And like, oh, look how cute it is. People ascribe their emotions to that animal. It's like, well, the animal's not happy or sad or whatever.
Opposed to killing it, it's a scorpion.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It's not evil or happy or sad. It probably wants food and wants to sleep and repeat every day to the rest of their lives. Like you, I think people have a tendency to ascribe emotions to things, corporations, gas stations, dolphins, things that, you know, you have no business having emotions attached to them, but
totally
humans
get
are
it.
Humans.
I totally get it.
As Duran Duran said, people are people.
But wait a minute, isn't that
Depeche Mode?
Depeche Mode, yeah. God, such a horrible song. All right, but what I'm saying is I kind of get it in the dolphin cockroach world. It doesn't make sense, but I understand it. In the fuel world, I just want the cheapest, highest octane, highest grade fuel I can put into my car the fastest. Good vibes. I don't even really know what that means. You know what I mean?
Neither do they.
You know what the genesis of this is? Vis-a-vis fuel, where you're right. We want the stuff that's the best, gets the best mileage, has the best additives, blah, 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 whatever it is, best price. It's nuts and bolts. Well, the genesis of this is bottled water. Water's water. We need water to survive. It's right. All more or less good. It doesn't taste any different. They've done studies, right. Blind stuff. But as soon as Evian and Fiji and whoever, Sparklets was like, our water is blah, blah, blah. And it brought in more to the thing than just water.
And they had to, because no pun intended, when that market got flooded, because we, the three of us, remember a time before bottled water and how dumb people looked carrying around bottled water that they purchased. And now it's just part of what you do. Yeah.
The health concerns around water when I was growing up were basically relegated to, look, when it's really hot, you got to let the hose water go out of the hose that's been sitting on the lawn, because tastes like the hose.
Yeah, and it's hot.
And it's hot. So let it run for about a 5 Mississippi. Purge.
Right, because the water that's in the pipes is much cleaner.
The hose
cleaner,
water
much
out.
Cleaner.
You're still going to get the water that's coming through a hot hose, but the sitting hose water, we're health nuts. Remember, our bodies are temples. Let the sitting, standing hose water purge out like bleeding a brake system, son. Yeah. So pump on that gas a few times. Let the hot hose water go through. And once it gets a little cooler,
then
that means it's
light.
Coming from the municipal system, traveling through the hot hose with the vulcanized rubber liner, and then you consume it that way.
Yeah,
smart.
I would argue that is nice as it is for kids to suck off the bottled water, they'll never really know the satisfaction of being out riding dirt bikes for the whole afternoon, or playing pickup football or ditch or whatever, like one of those hot summers.
Wrestling,
just running. Yeah, but away from the water source, you know what I mean? Like out on the bike, like out playing football or whatever, and at some point getting to that hose and inhaling it.
By the time you get to that hose, you need it.
That's right.
You know, the hose was out of necessity.
That's right.
I was like, oh, a hose. I guess I could have a sip of water. No, no, no.
All right, somebody shot me an email and I should say a tweet, and the tweet was talking about gay neighborhoods selling at a premium.
Gayberhoods.
Yes, and of course
all be
the gay neighborhoods sell at a premium.
You've been talking about this for years.
I've been talking about it for years. You should want, and
we should all be so lucky.
This weird. It's also a perfect example of us as a society, which is people have thoughts about gay neighbors and gay couples and gay relations and gay marriage and whatever. They have thoughts. Some are positive, some are negative, some are in between. But human beings have thoughts. Like when you say to your average human being, hey, what about gay marriage? Some will go, I don't like it. Others will go, well, who cares? I'm all for it. There's thoughts. If you went back 50 years, there would be different thoughts. Mm-hmm. There'd be more people going, I don't get it. Why do I have to get married? No, I'm against it. Now the thoughts sort of change and they morph and they progress and whatever. Fine. But your average American, when I say your average American, I mean 99.9% of Americans have much more concise and stronger and focused thoughts about their home, the value of their home, and how much it goes up every decade or every year.
Oh, the people who own homes, absolutely.
Right. Yes. So we live in a world that is trying to peddle this like homophobia all the time. Home. Speaking of home, that's right.
Homophobia.
The folks that may land on the less progressive side of gay marriage do land at the top of the mountain of I'd like my house to go up in value. And the way we're wired, even though we try to talk ourselves out of this wiring constantly, like, oh, homophobic, whatever. You have the neighborhood go up 15% in terms of home values, and everybody, regardless of what their thoughts about gay relations and gay marriage were.
It's Pride Week every week.
Every week are going to land it. That's how we are.
Yep.
That's you can say, well, that's worse. Okay, maybe it is, but that's how it is.
It is what it is.
Right. No,
it just is.
You bring the value of my house up, come on down. And I've been saying this for a million years, and I've seen it. I've seen it in Silver Lake. I mean, my sister, when she bought her first house there in 97, it was like $131,000. It was a pile of crap. Now, it was a shit show, but it was 130 grand, and that's because there's a lot of gangbangers and Chicanos hanging out in that neighborhood, and at a certain point, they got pushed out by the gays, and now it's on. So, I'm sorry, what does the gay neighborhood, what does the story say, Max Zapata?
Oh, just Zillow in May announced that gay neighborhoods are so popular that buyers are paying a premium to get in, sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's up to 200% in some markets.
You know, but my first thought, second thought, because yes, everything you said makes sense about improving the area. Secondly, as someone who has a almost 3-year-old, fewer kids vying for those school spots.
Oh, I didn't think of that.
Just statistically fewer, you know.
Not only that, but like ultimately the kids, whoever is going to jump over your fence and steal your barbecue is going to be the 17-year-old kid of the neighbor, not the 61-year-old parent.
Right. Fewer kids in the school, fewer kids hopping the fence.
Well, that's the thing. I think it's also possibly an overall safety issue.
Read the, what was it, the paragraph or two I wrote in 50 Years Will All Be Chicks a decade ago?
From the chapter, This Chapter Is Not a Hate Crime. Before you call GLAD, let me say this. I have no problem with gay people. I'm open-minded, but closed-behinded. I love the gays. All they do is pay taxes for schools they don't use, for prisons they don't inhabit, and to repair potholes their peach-colored Mini Cooper convertibles don't create. Meanwhile, they rarely use government programs, and they don't crap out more kids that use up resources. In fact, they gobble up all of the world's unwanted kids. They recycle like hell. Their cars always have a fresh coat of carnauba wax, and the lawns of their houses look like someone took tweezers and nasal hair clippers and finely manicured them. Finely manicured them. Their homes look like country clubs. You don't see the gay guy with an El Camino up on blocks and a sofa rotting on the porch. Those are the Jews. Oh, confused? I thought you didn't buy into stereotypes. The gays take care of their homes and their community. As a group, they care about the environment. They are very civically minded and nonviolent. You don't need to worry about a gay guy putting a knife in your back at the ATM. Plus, they leave all the chicks for me. Hold this page up and high-five it. You want to live in the gay part of town. If you live in LA, all you need to know about the gays versus other groups can be determined by a drive down Santa Monica Boulevard. Santa Monica Boulevard is a long, filthy, graffiti-covered stretch of asphalt that cuts through the heart of Los Angeles. Except for one two-mile stretch that has medians with green grass, spotless sidewalks, and happy couples strolling with laptops and lap dogs. Al Gore is obsessed with big business and its carbon footprint. I'm obsessed with groups and their social footprint. And the gays have a small social footprint. This is a stereotype they've earned, and it's a good one.
There you go. Mm-hmm. You're welcome, gays. Now backed up by Zillow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was 10 years ago.
Not just Adam Carolla waxing poetic.
Yeah. People should ask me more questions. We have Alyssa Milano fighting for everyone. Oh, we do.
Yes. Same here. And yeah. when people, if you're listening at home and you troll us, talking to you, just remember that we worked really hard to get to the place that we are at, and we continue to work. And what we fight for, we're not fighting for each other. We're fighting for you. We're not discriminating against who we're fighting for. We're fighting for everyone. We're fighting for Trump supporters. We're fighting for, you know, Christians. We're fighting for everyone. And it's something that I don't see from the other side. I don't ever feel like they are fighting for everyone. I think they are fighting for a very small group of white men.
All right. Well, there you go.
That's weird.
Plain math. Broken down. She it's fights great. For everyone.
Yeah.
The other side fights for a small group of white men.
When's she going to run for office?
I can't wait.
I was going to say. On that debate stage.
I don't know, man. If I had to vote between her and Gavin Newsom or Garcetti, I'd give her a shot at the homeless problem.
Carolla for Milano.
Yeah, man. All right. Let's see. We got the Rotten Tomatoes game to play. First, let me tell you about a safety issue. Everyone knows the risk of driving drunk. Could get in a crash, could hurt people, could kill people. A lot of people die every year this way. You know, for most people, we're kind of done with bubonic plague and malaria, unless, you know, if you live outside of Los Angeles. For everyone else, automotive deaths is a big issue, and driving drunk is a way to statistically put a few zeros behind that number. So take care of yourself. Let someone else do the driving. If you're going to go out and have a good time, and you're going to go out and have a good time, good. Get a designated driver, or jump in an Uber or a Lyft or a cab or whatever. Let the sober people do the driving. Someone you know has been drinking, take the keys and arrange for a sober ride home. Drive sober or get pulled over. Take care of yourself out there. All right. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the Rotten Tomatoes game next.
It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Hey, Buzzaboo. Ace, it's Steve in Atlanta. Just wondering your thoughts on cemeteries. A little bit of Adam Carolla unprepared, I guess, but aren't they stupid? Such large pieces of property that could be developed into many different things. A park, a new development for homes, retail. Yet we bury dead bodies underneath the ground. And it's not even like you can use the land and excavate everything, because it's clearly going to be haunted with the spirits of the dead bodies. So what's your take on cemeteries? I think they're stupid.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
Also, when did Nana become evil? Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, if something happened to any of us and then you were buried and then at some point your spirit came back, why is your spirit trying to kill everybody?
Why don't you go to the kitchen making muffins?
You go to Forest Lawn, you drive by Forest Lawn, when you assume most of those people and their beloved grandparents
elderly.
And veterans of World Wars and things like that, when did they turn bad? Why did everyone turn bad?
Yeah, they're not looking for a war.
Yeah, I agree.
The insane person had a good point, though. It is crazy that we just bury dead bodies.
I totally agree.
If you were going to go around this land, SoCal, and take the acreage and the location of some of these cemeteries, you'd be talking into the billions and trillions of dollars of real estate. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy how And also, this thing of, like, well, but what happened? You want to sit on a bench made of granite and visit grandpa or Nana, don't you? It's like, I don't know, open a fucking yearbook or just sit at home. Turn your computer on.
Well, one thing, I was visiting Manhattan with Christy years ago, and we just happened upon graveyards here and there, like just populated in the city from back in the day, and they just bury people, and they can't obviously like get rid of them now. And it's like, in a place where land is tens of thousands of dollars per square foot, there's just little graveyards here and there, and they're super old and they're super cool. Protected. But
you go to Wall, I think there's one right in the middle of Wall Street. I don't know where it is, Max Pata, but right in the Wall Street area, there is an old. Oh, it's right there. I mean, obviously, it'd be millions and millions of dollars worth of footprint to build a high rise on. You know, it's like, it's kind of one of these things where maybe this is a blessing in a weird way, because if we had, if we were cavalier about it, like, all right, he's dead, dig him up, let's move him, there'd just be a Trump Tower sitting in the middle to look like would be in like a water park, and you know, it's just we would ugly ourselves off a cliff, right? There'd just be strip malls everywhere, and but anyway, it is weird, this reverence, and then it's also weird that we need to do something. But let me float this idea, which I've never floated in my life. I was listening to my friend Dennis Prager, and he was playing an old interview that he did with his dad, who's passed away. And he made this observation, which I thought was interesting, which is the pictures, moving pictures or whatever, like seeing a silent movie of someone doesn't bring back nearly what a recording of them minus any visuals does. You know what I mean? And so
I'd rather have the recording.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Now, because we've all seen the weird black and white, you know, silent movies.
Yeah,
like choppy. Presidents walking in the 20s through the forest or something and at the state park. And it doesn't mean anything. But the voice. Here's a theory. Now that we are going to have thousands, and everyone is going to have recordings of them, recordings, podcasts, video cameras, whatever, just recordings of them when they're gone. Sonny, Natalia, put down those cigarettes and that beer. This is your dad talking from the grave.
Listen up.
Now listen to me.
Avenge me.
Avenge me. No, but not that my kids will do this, but they'll have thousands of hours of me talking, and they'll have hours of their mom talking. Everyone's going to have hours of everything. My daughter's already been captured on whatever gram, or whatever they film themselves standing.
Ooh, think about this. Footnote, by the time you die, there's no way that your kids will be able to listen to all of the audio you've recorded and released in their lifetime.
So
they wouldn't anyway.
With that in mind, they couldn't. In the past, we had no way of recording somebody's life. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally, pictures are 10 minutes old in terms of Earth's history. So you'd take a granite block, you'd put their name and something in it, on it, and the date, and you'd just put it in the ground.
Yeah.
A little quote. And then the way to remember this person or to have to keep a connection with the person, to physically go where the block was and then sit next to the block and like talk to it.
That's interesting.
Or spill a little malt liquor on it, or, you know, what the Corollas did. They spill a little malt liquor on there. But now, okay, so that was in a weird way, like it was an emotional necessity. So you couldn't just take Nana away and scatter her ashes to the wind. I mean, some people would, but where would I go to be with her?
Right.
Where would I go to remember her, to visit? Where's the proof that she was alive? Well, now you open your you look at your phone. You can see a thousand hours of footage of them running around at all different stages of their life. Do we need the block and the ground anymore? And are we going to start seeing that as really archaic?
Yes. Yeah, so on that point, I remember coming across an article years ago. I tried to look for it. I can't find it. But basically the idea is, and it's since come out, that someday, soon, there will be more dead people on Facebook than there will be alive people. Facebook now is kind of a de facto memorial for people who die. You know what I mean? Like,
their legacy pages.
Someone dies, they obviously don't shut down their page or they don't, you know, they try to get a car crash. They don't like deactivate their account or whatever. It's just there, and people will go onto the account and they'll say, hey man, thinking of you, love it. Even though they're dying, it's a way for a community to come together.
Jeffrey Epstein every morning. Oh, my God, I miss you, dude. That's I miss you, bro.
Not at all what
and, I hear what you're saying.
To both of your points, you got to start watching Black Mirror because everything you talk about has already happened on the show.
Oh, no.
So there's an episode from this season where a young married couple is, you know, moves into the new farmhouse, whatever, living the life. He goes out to get some milk and he never comes back and he gets in a car accident. And she's mourning and she's very sad, of course, misses him. And his sister or her friend or something says, you know, there's a program now that, you know, you might be interested in. She doesn't want anything to do with it. And of course, she gets really sucked into it, where a program compiles all the texts you've ever sent and everything you've ever had on social media. And he, the dead husband, in quotes, will text you and go, hey, it's me. Because there is so much text.
You can piece together a person's
life. And then
life,
when you're comfortable with that, they go to another level. And then you could face chat because there's so much video of people's faces. And then it goes on and on from there.
Yeah,
so this is happening.
The Adam Carolla ghost is full of misspellings.
And another thing.
Well, and also, if you really want to be fair, like, you could say there's 20,000 hours of audio, but once you back out the 13,000 hours of complaining about red turn arrows, you're not left with that much.
Yeah, yeah, real thoughts. A
couple of taco power rankings, and that's it.
Gotta love beef tacos.
All right. One last thing. I don't know why, but I brought it up. I was talking to Garrigus earlier today, and he was talking about how inept the guards were at the Epstein thing in the prison, and what a disaster the prison is or whatever. And then he was mentioning that the guards were suspended. And I thought, you know, when I hear stories about the cop or the fireman or the school teacher who's suspended with pay, always like,
yeah, they have vacation days.
Okay, you're just going to stay home and get paid.
Must be nice.
Fine. But I don't know, you're a fireman. Maybe you like playing foosball and eating chili with the boys, or you miss the Dalmatian or something like that. You're a teacher. One could think, well, I'd like some kids in my class. I have to stay home. When you're a prison guard, when you work at one of the worst prisons in America, and they go, stay home and get paid.
Can't do another word.
You go to prison for a living.
Yeah.
Like, your job is, there's prisoners that are in there full time. Your job is going to prison. You professionally go to prison.
Yep.
And you can say, well, at least I'm not in a cage. No, you're standing outside of a cage in a hallway
that's now a
longer, thinner cage. Like, you're in a cage. That's where you work in a cage.
You're surrounded by bars.
Right. Yeah. So you go home, and you go to the mailbox and get your check.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's got to be the greatest gig to be sent home with pay.
I've always wondered about that. How that's a punishment to anybody.
It isn't a punishment to anybody unless you're a strip club DJ, but they never get sent home with pay. The jobs, they're actually, you would like to be sent home with pay is prison guard and cop and all that stuff. They do get sent home with pay. The other ones where, I don't know, you make change for the dancers in the hotel rooms or whatever it is, they never get sent home with pay.
At least the teachers have to go to a rubber room every day. They don't get to stay home.
Oh, that's right. All right, should we do the Rotten Tomatoes game, Dawson and Max Panna?
And the game makes their picks, guessing if it's rotten or fresh.
If they guess it exactly, we'll get a bonus 5.
It's the Rotten Tomatoes game. You know how we do it. Give me the Rotten Tomatoes game. Now it's time to play it.
All right, now, Ace, I know you were definitely on top of this, but for those who don't know, last week in Hollywood, the biggest story was the split between Marvel and Sony over the rights to Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah. Sad that we may only have 26 Spider-Man movies. The idea that this would get cut in its short, in its infancy, that there's a Spider-Man, there's live action, there's animated.
What happens at the end of the story?
I mean, I'm in danger of not seeing Spider-Man when I close my eyes at night. I'm this close to not seeing Spider-Man.
You may never know.
Jesus.
So today's
Christ.
Rotten Tomatoes game, we're going to look back at some of the movies that Sony has made in the past surrounding that kind of genre. First up, starring Matthew Broderick and Japan's biggest fear, the film features destruction, heroism, and Kashmir. Performed by Puff Daddy.
This is tangential.
1998's Godzilla.
Mm, 1998's Godzilla.
The poster says Godzilla, size does matter.
The marketing campaign for this was brilliant. Remember, I don't know if you remember, if you were in LA at the time, Gina, but they had billboards, like a huge billboard. This billboard is the size of his toe. You know what I mean? Okay. It was very clever campaign.
Yeah.
It's not as good as the Shaft billboards that say too much Shaft for you.
All right. So, yeah, the poster again has the helicopters flying by his shin. I wonder how that's going to work out for the occupants of the helicopter. Can I tell you this? If there's ever a situation where it's Godzilla or King Kong or Godzuki or Mothra or whatever, and I'm in a situation where the guy's like, put on this headset and jump into this Huey. We're going to where the monsters. I'd be like, Ted, listen to me. I swear to God, if you get any lower than 500 feet above the fucking head of that monster, I will choke you. If you do that move where we're just going to fly through his armpit, no! No! We have a helicopter. We get to be high above the fray. Do not get down at eye level.
Don't let your hubris get you.
The one advantage we have over this monstrous creature.
Remember, King Kong has some vertical. Like, the idea of, like, well, we're up above where his hand would stretch out. He could jump and swat us.
Godzilla has a little triceratops or T-Rex arms.
Yeah, we got one thing going for us. It is the ability to be above the fray.
Out of reach.
Please, let's not make the mistake that
circle around
else.
The toes.
And, by the way, if you see the first 9 helicopters get swatted out of the air and you start heading for his armpit, I will choke you.
Yeah, you won't be swatted dead by him.
You're professional pilots. This is your move? Okay.
This was your buddy Dean Devlin and Roland Emmerich.
Oh, boy. Went to high school with Dean, yeah. All right. Yeah, this was big. It was basically saying we're taking Godzilla and he's not going to fight the smog monster. We're bringing him into the new technology.
They also made a big deal out of not showing Godzilla before. Like, they put a big embargo. Before the movie came out, there were no commercials. Commercials, I couldn't see the monster.
All right, they didn't like it, but it still was sort of entertaining and sort of had some, I don't know, some messages about ecology or something.
Oh, well, that's a game changer.
I think there's always that thing of like the oceans have warmed and we've woken up the whatever. I think there may have been a little of that. I went 41.
Oh.
Yeah. So this was the critics. I remember they killed this movie because this was the Independence Day guys, and they're like, Independence Day is no good, and it was a huge hit. So when this came out, it was Knives Out. I actually kind of like this movie, but the critics killed it. I said 22.
Oh, 39.
Godzilla is rotten at Joe Montana.
16.
Woo. Oh, wow, that was
not
rotten.
Not nearly that bad.
No, it's
also kind of silly and fun. Hank Azaria's in it, and it's kind of funny. And
yeah.
It's not good, but it's not that bad.
Not that bad.
Kevin Bacon is invisible in this next movie.
Yeah.
And not because he's in it. It's because he's the benefactor of translucent powers that give him the ability to creep on women and other things.
I like that movie, too.
In 2000's Hollow Man.
Never heard of this.
What? Oh, yeah.
This is a big
movie. Elizabeth Shue.
This is a big movie.
Okay.
Yeah, this was a big movie.
Paul Verhoeven?
Don't remember liking this, but I also didn't remember sort of watching the whole thing. It was kind of like The Fly, I guess.
It's a fantastic concept that didn't quite get there.
So he's just a virtual voice in the movie.
He's a scientist. His team of scientists figure out a way to make things invisible through the serum, right? And he, of course, tests it on himself like all good scientists do.
Sure.
And he becomes invisible and goes insane and kills people.
Cool.
All right.
There's some very good stuff in this movie.
Oh, okay, stop it.
Jeez, I don't know what to do. All right. I will... I'm just going to go with lethargy and leave my 41.
Oh, I'm close to you. I will watch this anytime it's on TV. This is this is one of those movies where it's kind of entertaining, but it's not really that good. It's type of 49.
Oh, wow. I was also going to leave my score, but I went a little lower because it looks terrible. So I was going to say 39, but I said 32.
Hollow Man is rotten at 28.
All right.
All right.
It's not that bad.
It's not that bad.
This next movie gets a few points right out of the gate.
Max Spada, how old is Elizabeth Shue? And I don't know. We got to figure out what she's up to. But, you know, my X Factor? I could be catching up to her.
She's 55.
Wow.
Oh, okay.
And she's on that new show, The Boys, on Amazon.
Oh. Mm. She'll always be Allie with an eye. Karate
she just
kid
bought herself 3 years. But I'm catching her. We're going to have sex soon. I mean, mathematically, according to my X Factor.
It'll be compelling, yeah.
When Karate Kid came out, we were long ways apart. Ways apart, but I feel like...
You made some ground, my friend.
Mm-hmm. I'll, Max Pat, remind me to really fully flesh out the X move.
Okay.
I told you guys I caught Charlene Tilton the other day, didn't I?
Oh, no, I didn't hear that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's exciting.
Not by law, but needs to have sex with me.
Yeah. I mean, eventually you're going to get...
Should have sex with me.
Proves she should have sex with him.
I would be... It would be a better than lateral move if I went to her home and said, we're now bunking up.
Wow.
This is a new thing.
Wow.
Now, of course, when Dallas or Falcon Crest or whatever came out in like 1983, that would have been the worst day of her life.
That's a victim. Yeah, that's a crime.
So, Elizabeth, you better hope that show stays on. Because I'm gunning for you.
Another good decade or two, and you might get to Christie Brinkley territory.
That's going to be a race to the grave. I was working on that one last night.
That's a compliment to Christie.
All right. Sorry. Go ahead.
Bump your scores up a few points for this next movie because Kate Beckinsale is in leather spandex. It also features an eternal battle between the Sunnis and Shiites of the supernatural, werewolves and vampires. 2003's Underworld.
I don't know anything about these movies.
What's the theme again?
Sony.
Scott Speedman. Why do I know that name?
He's a person.
Okay.
He's did some acting, kind of leading man kind of guy.
I gotta see a picture of him.
These triple chin, male pattern ball. Oh, no, wait a minute. Let's see. Kate Beckinsale. These are movies like, who's the other?
Not Laura Croft, but the Mila Jovovich.
Yes.
He's cute. He's in stuff.
Best known for Felicity.
Thank you.
So these movies, these weird worlds, I never quite...
The franchise of Mila Jovovich. She did like 5 of them.
Oh, Resident Evil. Yeah,
that's Resident. Vin Diesel's. He's blind, he's a swordsman, but he's in outer space. Like I don't.
Or Blade.
On a planet.
Another Blade movie.
It's always raining. It's always raining wherever planet. It's always at night. And it's always raining. You know why? For me, like my deal is I'll go. I'll go full Bruce Willis trapped on top of a tower, has got to fight it out with the terrorists, or I'll even go Star Wars. I don't like the murky world of, they use swords, but they travel in time, what is it?
Right.
We have the
is
technology
it archaic or is it futuristic?
He's got a sawed off shotgun, but he travels throughout the galaxy.
He flies on a wooden boat.
Yeah. I always feel these are that. And all the weird undead Dracula stuff. The rules are never quite defined as how you kill them or if you can kill them or if you become one of them.
Can we get some information? Did they make a sequel to this? I think a couple.
All right. I don't like this. I don't know. A couple of points for, strong female in the lead doing the kick in the ass. Mm-hmm. Kate Beckinsale. Do people hate it? No. I don't. I'm going 41.
Oh, great, because I'm completely guessing I said 40.
Also totally guessing I said 50.
Underworld is rotten at 31.
But the people.
People have it at 79. Oh, all right, game's close. I think I'm behind, but I have to make up some points in the next two.
The Special Weapons and Tactics Unit is armed with not only with grenade launchers and AR-15s, but also Samuel L. Jackson.
Hey, man, you're the SWAT or you're not.
In 2003's SWAT.
I saw this in the theater.
I've never heard of any of these movies.
Oh, this is a Colin Farrell vehicle. He was very hot at the time.
Mm. SWAT. Yeah.
You're the SWAT or you're not.
And mm-hmm. Michelle Rodriguez, is this one of her first roles? Is this before the Fast and Furious stuff?
This is 2003. Oh, 2003.
That's right there.
Okay.
I don't know.
LL Cool J?
This is a weird, it's a weird genre. Not a weird genre, but it's a genre I'm kind of glad is gone. These just testosterone-laden cool cop, you know, sort of things.
You love those.
Yeah, now, sure. They got to be really bad. I watched TJ Hooker.
Okay. This is just kind of middling bad.
Right.
Oh, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's not epically bad.
Yes.
There's even one or two good scenes in this movie.
I have zero idea what this is.
At one point, they have like a train exercise on a plane or something. There's a couple good scenes.
All right. I say it's rotten at 41. Oh. I'm just sticking with 41 all the way through.
I said 40 again.
Sticking with 41 all the way through.
38.
SWAT is rotten at 47.
Okay.
All right. What did you say, Gina?
38.
I'm saving a lot of ink. I've gone with 41 in all of them.
Now, before Antonio Banderas voiced a sword-swinging black-booted cat, he played a sword-singing black-caped man, a man named Zorro.
Mm.
1998's The Mask of Zorro.
Mm-hmm. I think what we learned here is Sony doesn't put out a lot of good movies.
A lot of buzz around Zorro.
This had Catherine Zeta-Jones in it. Yeah. Boy, when she was at the height of her powers.
Ooh la la.
Yeah. Let me ask you, Brian.
What a vision. Yeah, please.
Elizabeth Hurley, Catherine Zeta-Jones, height of their powers.
For me, it's Liz Hurley, but it is not a huge gap. I mean, I would not. Second place is not a loser in this competition.
There are no losers in this competition.
But I get Liz Hurley at the peak.
I am. No. I am too. But
really,
this is,
she's God. She's
Catherine Zeta-Jones is beautiful. I the sophisticated.
It's the English accent,
British. Welsh or whatever. But,
this is a great. All right. So look, we love her. Anthony Hopkins forgot. All right, now I'm going to have to make up some points here because I feel like I'm behind. But we're all pretty knotted up. But
let me guess, 41?
It's probably in there. I got to go either high or low. That means 29 or 63. High or low? I can't go. It's probably in the mid-40s somewhere, 50. Mm. But I gotta make up 10 or 15 points, so I got to make a move. I go high.
Oh.
I go bold. I go 63.
Wow. I would be very surprised. I've not seen this. I said 33. I went the other way.
Oh, wow. 59.
Ace, you went for the right goalpost.
Sweet.
The Mask of Zorro is certified fresh.
Wow.
At 82%.
Wow! I've not been that surprised in a long time.
Critics have it higher than the people. A sword fighting movie. I don't know. I think there's there's a little affirmative action going on here. You got a Hispanic lead. You got Catherine Zeta in there, strong woman. I think.
People love Zorro.
I think
you may have beat me on that. You picked up 30 points.
All right. Let's see.
Gina Grad.
Yeah.
I always say your name first because you're always in third place.
That's not true. I win all the time.
You got a score of 78.
Okay.
Congratulations on your score of 78, which puts you 5 points behind Adam Carolla.
I don't like that.
That was a tough.
It's either second or third, though, leaving the bald one.
No, that was a tough last score.
Today is a day I think we can all rejoice. Almost wish four people were playing this game. So one, lacking hair, could be off the podium completely. Adam Carolla, a score of 73. Crushing the bald one, coming in at 92.
Oh,
Ace Man with the win.
How embarrassing.
Although, I got to say, with my, you know, like with my 41 that I used all throughout for the win,
mm-hmm.
I feel like it's one of those things where, you know, you ask the secretary who they like in the Super Bowl, and they pick all the playoff teams, or they just flip a coin, or they go, you pick for me, and they're right more than you are.
Oh, I like Eagles.
Yeah.
Yeah, your expertise in football has a lower batting average than someone who's picking, who's looking at the uniforms.
Yeah, you were doodling in your multiple choice Scantron.
Sad. Mm. All right, let me hit
the Boston Tomatoes game. You know how we do.
Wow, Gina 55 going into the last one. Brian 43.
Brutal.
Me 54. We were right there. All right.
Ask of Zorro.
Castrol. It shouldn't be that high. Castrol Edge, stronger under pressure. Engines can lose up to 10% of performance due to friction. Castrol Edge with fluid titanium transforms under pressure to keep the metal from rubbing and robbing. Performance. Three times, fool. Stronger than leading full synthetic against viscosity breakdown. It is the best. It's the best edge formula formulated to exceed the highest industry standards. Castrol Edge. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back and do the news with Gina Gratt.